Is the pot calling the kettle black? We'll discuss this and other things today on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm your host here on Principles and Policies. And what do I mean by the pot calling the kettle black? If you're not familiar, it's an idiomatic expression. It basically means that someone is accusing someone else of having a particular attitude or saying a particular thing while they themselves are at least as big a practitioner of the philosophy, if you will, or the kind of strange the kind of attitude that the person is being called out for. That's a little confusing, but if when we were little, my brother and I would go to my mom, and one of us would say, well, he hit me. And, okay, well, who hit who first? And then, if I would say, well, I guess I did hit him first. That would be a case of me going to complain about my brother hitting me and him hitting me back. That would be a case of the pot calling the kettle black. Now, it's usually not in that simplistic kind of a thing, but it's very common. If your parents or grandparents, you know about this. Very often you've witnessed the transaction between the two kids and you know what's happened. So, someone is taking a kind of a haughty attitude and saying, hey, you can't do that to me. You can't hit me, even though you may have hit them first. Okay. Well, why do I bring this up? There's a very strange thing going on right now in politics, although it's starting to fade away because the meme is not working. And that is that the Democrats, Kamala Harris, has decided. Now, I don't think she started it, but that her campaign did pick it up. She has decided that it's an ineffective thing to claim that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are quote unquote weird. Now, I just for fun, I mean, we all have a general idea of what weird means. Okay. The 1828 dictionary, Webster's 1828, I went to it and looked. Well, weird originally meant someone who engaged in witchcraft. Well, that's fallen out of use. It's no longer a valid definition. If we were to try to apply that definition today, I can assure you that Kamala Harris and the governor of Minnesota, who seems to have come up with this weird meme, his name is Tim Walz, and it seems really what they mean is a more modern definition of weird. What does weird mean? Well, you can look it up, but I'll give you what I found. Strikingly odd or unusual, especially in an unsettling way, strange, suggestive of the supernatural. That's not really where they're going. Or of or related to the fate or fates. Again, that's an archaic use, and that's not where they're going. They're going with number one, strikingly odd or unusual, especially in an unsettling way, strange. The word that also comes up a lot, for some reason, is creepy. And really, that is creepy and weird. A lot of people grossly overused the word creepy, especially the modern generation. Way overused creepy. For instance, a traditional man may attempt to, for instance, do something for a woman, open a door, if she's dropped something, help her pick it up, and that kind of thing. And a lot of modern women will say that that was creepy because the man wasn't, you know, her age or wasn't, well, to be quite honest, more traditional women don't do this. Modern women have this thing about, they assume that if a man is older and they're attempting to help them, with opening a door, picking things up they've dropped, that kind of thing, that it's some kind of a quote unquote creepy attempt to begin a relationship with them. When in fact, the, I've done this before. If I see a woman coming, I will open a door. Why? Because I'm old fashioned. I learned my mom said you hold a door for, now I've had women yell at me for holding a door for them. And I'm like, fine. If I see you again, I won't bother. That doesn't mean I stop doing it. But creepy, the actual definition of creepy is of or producing a sensation of uneasiness or fear as of things crawling on one's skin or annoyingly unpleasant or repulsive. Well, none of these really fit with the situations I brought up. But why are people like Tim Welz and Kamala Harris? By the way, Tim Welz is a front runner for VP in the Democratic Party, as is Josh Shapiro, who's Pennsylvania governor. So we got Tim Welz, we got Josh Shapiro, and Arizona Senator Mark Kelly. They each have their particular pluses or minuses. We're not going to go into there. We'll see at the convention what happens. One of the problems you're going to run into at the Democratic National Convention, they're getting ready to do their nominating telephone call that's absolutely necessary so they can appear on the ballot in Ohio and like five other states because their convention is so late. And someday we might talk about why that is later. But that being the case, some of these people like Tim Welz are coming out and jumping on this weird, and I just used the weird idea that somehow J.D. Vance and Donald Trump are weird. Now, what are they weird for? Weird or creepy? Why are they weird or creepy? Well, is this a case of the pot calling the kettle black? Sure seems like it might be. Now, I'm going to play a little thing from the Associated Press, which is, let's face it, folks, the Associated Press is nothing like unbiased. The Associated Press is far left in the tank for any Democratic candidate for any office. Doesn't matter. Republicans are quote unquote weird. and this is going to attempt to explain why the Biden campaign is jumping onto this bandwagon.
Kamala Harris has a new word to describe Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. Weird. And it's catching on.
But he and his running mate sure seem to have a lot to say about me. And by the way, don't you find some of their stuff to just be plain weird?
Democrats are using the word in multiple interviews and online, notably to Vance's suggestion that political leaders who don't have biological children don't have a, quote, direct stake in the country. The weird message appears to have given the Democrats a narrative advantage, as the Trump campaign has spent days trying to highlight what's weird about the Democrats.
We don't want a wacky San Francisco liberal serving as commander-in-chief. We don't want Kamala Harris.
Vance reposted an X video Donald Trump Jr. shared, in which Harris talks about climate anxiety and whether people should have children. He calls her statements, quote, really weird stuff. This hasn't stopped the Harris campaign from publishing multiple news releases that called Vance and his ideas weird. Experts suggest that the message is resonating with people because it's concise and relatable. This comes at a time when the Harris campaign is trying to shift strategy to adapt to her profile.
Okay, did you hear that little bit at the front? And it's catching on. Well, that's the Associated Press for you. It's not catching on. And in fact, people are saying to themselves, what exactly are they getting at that it's weird? Now, this thing about biological children, Well, what he actually said, he talked about, it was in an interview with, I think, with Tucker Carlson. And he talked about the Democrats being sort of overrun with childless women that were, in fact, cat ladies. Okay? He did not, he was not saying that all Democrats are childless and that they had no stake in the country. He was making a sarcastic remark, and as a sort of a world-class sarcast. I'm sort of bragging on myself. It's not necessarily something to brag about. Nonetheless, I am sarcastic. My whole family is that way. I have. If you think I'm bad, you should meet my youngest daughter, who has the student has surpassed the master. She's very sarcastic. My middle daughter as well, and my oldest daughter. So all my kids picked up the virus. But what was he actually, criticizing the Democratic Party for, quote, "This is about criticizing the Democratic Party for becoming anti-family and anti-children." Now, he told this to Megyn Kelly. This is for Megyn Kelly's program.
As the Democratic Party ousts President Joe Biden and elevates Vice President Kamala Harris to the top of its ticket without a single vote having been cast for her in that role, in just a matter of hours, the media suddenly turning all of its focus seemingly to Senator J.D. Vance, Trump's running mate. Donald Trump's number two coming under intense criticism for comments he made 3 years ago about, quote, childless cat ladies, because this is what Americans who can't pay their mortgages care about. Senator Vance is here to respond to this controversy, but first we want to start by walking you through how it all began. Going back now to July 2021, Mr. Vance had just launched his campaign for senator in the great state of Ohio, and he gave a speech to a conservative organization called the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. This was a speech essentially about declining birth rates, and they're bad, by the way, in the United States. They're at a 17-year low, and they continue to go in the wrong direction, and what it means for the future of this country. Mr. Vance talked about how he wanted to see the Republican Party as a pro-family party. He discussed the importance of children and brought up the fact that many top Democratic leaders don't have any kids, questioning what kind of a message the party as a whole is sending to young Americans. Take a listen.
I want to take aim at the left, specifically the childless left, because I think the rejection of the American family is perhaps the most pernicious and most evil thing that the left has done in this country. Consider all of the next gen of the Democrat Party. The names are obvious. They're well-known people. Kamala Harris, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who's now the Secretary of Transportation, Cory Booker, AOC. Think all these people. They're different. They come from different walks of life, different parts of the country. What is the one thing that unites every single one of them? Not a single one of them has any children. Look, a lot of people are unable to have kids for very complicated and important reasons. There are people, of course, for biological reasons, medical reasons, that can't have children. The target of these remarks is not them. It's important to point that out. It is one thing to recognize that there are people who don't have children. It's one thing to recognize there are people who don't have children through no fault or choice of their own. But it's something else to build a political movement invested theoretically in the future of this country when not a single one of them actually has any physical commitment to the future of this country. Kids are the ultimate way that we find healthy people, at least I think self-meaning in life. We should treat this as a crisis in this country. And we should send the signal to the culture that we are the pro-family party and we're going to back it up with real policy.
Okay, this is how groups like the Democratic Party, the Associated Press, and even some groups inside the Republican Party, who I recently watched an interview with someone who was a former spokesman for the Republican National Committee, being very critical and saying that J.D. Vance was weird. Okay, is it weird to believe that the way you can keep a country and a faith and a culture moving is by adults having children? and teaching those children how they are to live. Is this not what the Bible teaches us? To have kids, to teach them how to be fearful of God and obedient to God, and to acknowledge God and to worship God in the same way that we have kids, that we teach how to be. We are in the United States of America. We teach our kids not to be European. We don't teach them to be African. We don't teach them to be Asian. We don't teach them to be Canadian. We don't teach them to be Mexican. We teach them to be American. And what he's saying here is that there are a number of people in upper echelons of the Democratic Party who have chosen not to have children, but want to dictate to us how we are to educate our own children. Okay. Now, he mentioned Pete Buttigieg. Pete Buttigieg and his husband, pardon me, there is no such thing, his male partner, were permitted to adopt a baby. And honestly, if you want to see weird, you don't have to go any further than looking up the picture of Pete Buttigieg nursing his baby from a strap-on set of false breasts. And that picture is out there, and it's not a composite, it's not a fake or a gin up. It's a picture of Pete Buttigieg nursing a baby from a fake pair of breasts. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know your definition, you know, what you think is weird, but I know that's what I think is weird. I think the whole situation is weird. Is it legal? Oh, sure. Obviously, it happened. But is it right? And the answer is, by what standard? You see, that's the whole question here. By what standard is something right or weird or creepy or anything like that? By what standard? What standard are we to use to judge? And are we to judge? Let's not get in too far into the weeds on that. The answer is yes, we're supposed to judge. Now, Matthew 7, verses 1 through 3, I'm reading this out of the English Standard Version, says, "Judge not that you be not judged." In other words, that's where everybody stops. Judge not that you be not judged. Okay? But the passage, this is from the Sermon on the Mount, and it goes on from here. "For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye?" What this is telling us to do is, it's not saying don't judge, it says don't judge self-righteously. And that by the same standard that you use, and again, there's that phrase, that standard, "For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." In some biblical translations, it does say standard. So we're not to, it's not that we're not to judge. It's that we're not to judge self-righteously. Okay? Now, am I being self-righteous in my judgment that probably shouldn't be permitted? No, I'm not. Because I'm using a standard that is not me. It's not my own. It's beyond me. It's transcendent, away from me. It's above and beyond me. It's the standard of God. It's God's standard. And that's the standard by which everything should be being done. Is that the standard by which some people are being adjudged weird and other people are being adjudged normal? No, it's not at all. This is a subjective use. This is failing to see the plank in your own eye and attempting to pluck the speck out of your neighbor's eye. you know, do I think J.D. Vance is perfect? Do I think Donald Trump is perfect? No, man, far from it. Do I think they're the saviors of America? No, far from it. Do I think that somehow they're disqualified because they're in, because of their imperfections? I mean, Lord forbid. There never has been and never will be a perfect ruler except Jesus Christ. And all these people are essentially lining up, whether they admit it or not. If you said this to Kamala Harris, she would say that you were weird. They are lining up to be God's representative on earth to rule us as the chosen representative of God. Does that mean that, for instance, Joe Biden is the chosen representative of God? He got elected, therefore, yes. God would not allow him to have been elected had he not been his choice to be the ruler. Think about Saul and David. Was Saul God's anointed? And the answer is yes, he was. When Saul grotesquely overstepped his powers and performed the office of the priest in place of the priest who wasn't there, what did God do? God removed his anointing for Saul. Does that mean that Saul was instantly not king in a sense? Yes. But how long did it take for the new anointed, who was David? Remember that Samuel went. And went through the sons of Jesse and thought he'd gone through all of them. They said, well, no, there's one out tending the sheep, and well, go get him. And they brought him in, and the Lord immediately spoke to Samuel and said, that's my anointed. And he was, at the time, he was a boy. And what did he do? He was taken to Saul, and he lived in Saul's house for a time. Became very close with Saul's son and heir, Jonathan. And they became very close friends. The left, in a very weird interpretation, said that they were lovers and all that. No, they were extremely close, like brothers. In fact, that Saul gave David his daughter, Michal, to marry. That didn't work out very well. But did once David had been anointed, did he become king right away? No, it took years. It took years and years and years. And then David only ruled the southern part of the kingdom, not the northern part, what later became Judah, the southern part of the kingdom, and then Israel in the north. It took him years to unite those two kingdoms into one. So just because you're God's anointed doesn't necessarily mean you're a great guy, because Saul was not a great guy. He didn't start out too bad. But what happened to him was his ego got away from him. He began to sort of begin to think that he, because he was God's anointed, he could do anything that he wanted to, not necessarily anything God wanted to. Was David a perfect ruler? No, by far from it. He murdered one of his mighty men for the sake of his wife. He wanted Uriah's wife, and he got him murdered. And in the end, Bathsheba gave birth to a child which died very quickly after David had gone through all this rigmarole. And, you know, this elaborate plot to hide. And, of course, Nathan found out right away and said, you know, talk to him about that. But Israel was chock full of bad kings. Judah was chock full of bad kings. Does that mean none of these kings had the anointing? No. They all had the anointing. Why? Because they had the job. If they didn't have the anointing, they wouldn't have the job. Why did God allow these terrible rulers to rule? He allowed terrible rulers to rule because sometimes God gives the leadership you deserve and not the leadership you want. Now, Is it weird to believe that there isn't an objective standard by which you should judge whether someone is quote-unquote weird or not? Is that weird? Of course it's not. Of course it's not. We as Christians are told that we should judge things by a standard. It may not be the world's standard. And part of one of the problems that we're having with this is by what standard? Let's go back to J.D. Vance.
We're effectively run in this country via the Democrats, via our corporate oligarchs, by a bunch of childless cat ladies who are miserable at their own lives and the choices that they've made, and so they want to make the rest of the country miserable too. And it's just a basic fact. You look at Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, AOC, the entire future of the Democrats is controlled by people without children.
And this is the point he was trying to make, not the fact that what the AP said, and again, ladies and gentlemen, I did several shows on gaslighting. What the AP was doing in that clip I ran earlier was gaslighting what J.D. Vance had actually said. Well, it's a sarcastic remark, and I agree. Is it appropriate? It's not completely true, but it's not completely false. It's a form of a possibly a logical fallacy, and I'll give you that. But turning it into saying something that was not said, that somehow people who don't have biological children don't have a stake in the country, that's not what J.D. Vance is saying. And in fact, we heard earlier in his remarks, he said, I'm not talking about people who have fertility issues. I'm not talking about people who have never married for whatever reason and chose not to have children. They're talking about people who are living a miserable life, have no friends, no family, and no children, no husband, and live alone with a bunch of cats. And we know some of these people. Now, some people, like for instance, my mother-in-law, well, she lives with us, so she's not completely without family. But she lived downstairs, and her cat, she had a cat. And she loved that cat, and the cat loved her. And actually, I loved that cat too. That was one of the friendliest cats. I would go down to visit, and the first thing he would do was crawl up in my lap and purr, and I would pet him. And he was a big old Maine Coon cat. And if you've ever had a Maine Coon cat, they're gigantic, they're furry, and they're very, very, very friendly. So you can understand why someone would want to keep a cat around. But my mother-in-law's a widow. And she's not really, she didn't want to get remarried. She was in her mid-70s. She was not interested in getting remarried. And, that's not what J.D. Vance was talking about. He's talking about ideologues who do not get married for political reasons because they have kind of a twisted view of environmentalism and those kinds of things. I can't bring a child into this because of, you know, nuclear possibility of nuclear war and blah, blah, blah. It's that kind of philosophy.
Well, the Harris team recirculated the comments this week. Leading Democrats and the media, the same media currently rewriting history to tell us Kamala Harris was never the border czar, to immediately pile on cue. On Tuesday, Hillary Clinton shared it on X and sarcastically wrote, "What a normal, relatable guy who certainly doesn't hate women having freedoms. Literally, your husband has been accused of repeated sexual assaults. So take a seat, madam."
The point that she's making, and it's an important point. First of all, gaslighting. We've talked about this. I just mentioned it again. Go back and listen to some of my shows in the archive. And yeah, I know some of you can't get into the website, and I'm fixing that. I'm attempting to fix that. I'm fighting with a couple of my providers to say, what is going on here? Nonetheless, let's go back to this. Gaslighting. Hillary Clinton was gaslighting. Why? My life is perfect, and therefore, I can pull the speck out of your eye, because I don't have a log in my eye. Yes, she does. And the same thing with the press, sitting there gaslighting us that Kamala Harris was never the border czar. Of course she was the border czar. I remember when that was all done. It was right at the beginning of the Biden administration, and several outlets who have come out and said that it's gaslighting to say that Kamala Harris was the border czar are the same ones who were running stories about Kamala Harris being appointed the border czar. President Biden may not have used that exact phraseology. Okay, fine. But that is the moniker that was attached to her by the press. And now the press is coming out and doing double backward somersaults to make you think that none of that had ever been done. The problem is that we have this thing called the internet, and it's the Wayback Machine. As much as some of these places are trying to scrub those references, when it became clear that that was going to happen, people went back and archived. So even when stories disappear or are put in places where you can't get to, other people have essentially archived them so that they can pull them up. And yes, Kamala Harris was referred to as the border czar. Now, there's an interview out there with her sitting across from normally a friendly interviewer. And let me remind you of something. Before Kamala Harris suddenly became the de facto, if not de jure, candidate for president of the United States on the Democratic ticket, because her president pulled out, even though he had already won the nomination. The convention hadn't happened, so he doesn't have it yet. He didn't have it yet. He pulled out, leaving her in charge, and no one, not a single person, voted for Kamala Harris as the presidential candidate in the Democratic Party. Not one. So why bring all that up? I bring it up because before all this happened, Kamala Harris was not treated with kid gloves by the press. She was not well liked. She's not well liked in her home state. The politicians in her home state. Was not well liked in the Senate. She was not well liked as the vice president, and the press didn't like her very much, and did not treat her with kid gloves in the slightest. And yet now all of a sudden, she's the best thing since sliced bread. She's the most wonderful possible candidate there could be. Now, the fact is that when she was chosen, she had been forced out of the presidential race. First of all, with a disastrous performance in the debates, Tulsi Gabbard, a Democrat from Hawaii who was running for president and was grotesquely mistreated by the press, and by the Democratic establishment, because she's a moderate Democrat. She wasn't a far left lunatic. Tulsi Gabbard took her apart. Honestly, if Joe Biden had been really looking for someone to soften his image as a far left ideologue, which he is, he should have picked Tulsi Gabbard, who at this point would be then the front runner for president of the United States. Now, could I vote for Tulsi Gabbard? No, not really. It depends on who the Republicans run against her. But nonetheless, I do admire her, and I don't think she's as ideologically glued to her party positions as some people might like to think. Again, I like Tulsi, and she would have been a much better vice president. She's very photogenic. She's very good with the press in front of a microphone. Unlike Kamala, who's not. Kamala does not have the nickname the Cackler in Chief for nothing, because when she's asked a tough question, the first thing she does is cackle and then attempt to deflect and answer an entirely different question. Now, that's not unheard of in the realm of politics. And we shouldn't be shocked by that. But Kamala is an expert practitioner in that. So there's more to this weird memeing, weird in quotes, the use of this memeing that somehow J.D. Vance is weird. You can see how celebrities and TV shows and sort of once they find a hook. Now, if anybody remembers back when Dan Quayle was running for vice president with George W. Bush, there was a meme that came out that all of a sudden all the big news outlets were talking about gravitas. If you're old enough to remember back that far, gravitas. Dan Quayle does not have the gravitas. This was a Democratic National Committee talking point that the news media picked up and continued to disseminate in a form of gaslighting. So I can remember tuning in, doesn't matter what network you tuned into, didn't matter what news outlet you would read if you read a newspaper, and I realize the newspapers are pretty much passe at this point, but news magazines, Newsweek, Time, all those news, and again, I realize they're passe too. It's all online, but they were talking about gravitas, and I mean using that specific term. Well, somebody came out and found the memo that basically said, we want you to talk about Dan Quayle's lack of gravitas. Well, what does gravitas mean? Well, strictly speaking, it's a Latin term. That's kind of made its way over to English, and almost nobody uses it. They used it at this point, and it basically means weightiness. What they were implying was, without saying so directly, that he was a lightweight. That Dan Quayle was a lightweight, and that he just didn't have the gravitas for the office. And then they used that potato thing, if you remember. They sent a campaign thing. They sent Dan Quayle to he was helping out with a spelling bee in school as part of the campaign. And a little kid got up and spelled potato the way we normally spell it, P-O-T-A-T-O. And Quayle reached up and put an E on the end. Well, he did that because he was given a card that had the word potato spelled with an E. Is it improper? No, it's not. It's one of the spellings you can use for potato. But look, you and I both, none of us ever spelled potato that way. It's allowed, but nobody did it. So they gave him a card, and he assumed that they were going off this card, and he reached up and put an E on the end. Oh, well, he can't even spell potato. I mean, that's how they memed on about this gravitas thing. So Megyn Kelly continues in her commentary.
On Wednesday, actress Jennifer Aniston weighed in, writing, I truly can't believe this is coming from a potential VP of the United States, and urged Senator Vance to think about his own daughter, hoping that she might never need IVF, which she accused Mr. Vance of being against, which, as we pointed out yesterday, is not true. And it did not end there. Watch.
How dare you? You never had a baby. Your wife had a baby. You know who else didn't have kids? George Washington, the father of our nation. Oh, like, Lord. Kamala, he raised Martha's mm-hmm. children.
Because they invalidate even the idea of women who use IVF to get pregnant, or women who don't have children, or women who are stepmoms. Like, none of those are valid women to them. Those women don't matter. They're trying to reinforce this message that the only valid version of America is the America where white women didn't leave the home.
My kids are older. Does that make me childless? I want to qualify.
He is falling into the line of Donald Trump, offending women, offending minorities.
So if you have stepkids, J.D. Vance is saying that you should not have as many rights as everybody else. Like, this is a person, him and the former president, they want to control women. Jesus did not have children. right?
Okay, you basically heard the piling on, the taking a something that was said that was a sarcastic remark with a specific purpose and broadening it and piling on and saying he's saying things that he didn't say. Now, why Whoopi Goldberg was going on about George Washington? George Washington desperately wanted to have kids, and he couldn't. So he raised Martha's children. Martha was a widow, and he raised Martha's children as his own, which that's fine. And there are women who don't have kids. I had a friend in college whose mother had died and whose father had remarried, and he remarried a woman who was in her late 40s and could no longer have children. Now, his father was an older man, probably, late 50s or maybe older, and married this woman who they didn't want to have kids. They didn't want to have kids because they already had his children. They had my friend and his sister to raise as their own children. And that happens a lot. We live in a society in which divorce is far too easy. No fault divorce is a terrible thing. And lest you think it was all liberal plot, Ronald Reagan signed the bill to allow for no fault divorce in California and started the ball rolling for the rest of the country. And has it been a disaster? Yeah, it has. It's left families in shambles, completely broken into pieces, unable to really recover from the it's terrible for kids. It's terrible for the adults. And what they'll tell you is very often is, the marriage was worse. The consequences of getting the divorce were worse than staying married. That's very rarely the case. And when it is the case, it's because people are not living by biblical principles regarding their marriage. Okay, that being said, there are all kinds of reasons why there are blended families. A lot of people have children who are from previous marriages and get remarried, and sometimes the father is looked upon as an actual father, and sometimes he's kind of an interloper. He's looked upon by the family as an interloper who really doesn't have anything to do with anything, someone who can be readily ignored. It just depends on the family and how they go into the marriage. Or I'm fully aware that there are women who have children out of wedlock on purpose, for whatever reason. And J.D. Vance was not saying anything, had said nothing and implied nothing about in vitro fertilization. Now, if you want my opinion on in vitro fertilization, it is a moral nightmare. So many questions that have to be answered. We did a show, earlier this year when the Alabama Supreme Court, I think I did two shows, when the Alabama Supreme Court came out and talked about how it come out with a decision that when someone had rather stupidly destroyed some embryos in an Alabama fertility clinic, that the Alabama Supreme Court ruled that these were human beings because they were fertilized eggs. And everybody went insane, and most politicians and most people came out on the wrong side of the question, I'll be quite honest. And how can I tell that? Because I judge by a standard. A human being is a human being. If it has one cell, if it has billions of cells, if it has hundreds of thousands of cells, if it has 100 cells, it's a human being. Is it a fully developed human being? No. And I'll bring up the argument I continue to use. I have a grandchild with Down syndrome. Is he the same as everybody else? Is he fully developed? Yes, he is. Is he the same as everybody else? No, no, he isn't. Why? He has a developmental issue. Does that make him less human? No, he's still a full human being. And he's a cute little guy, too, by the way. And he's a happy little man. And we love him. And nothing would have been done in our family. I can remember when my wife and I were trying to get pregnant. We say stupid things while we were trying to get pregnant. Of course, she got pregnant. I was involved in the process, which was part of the problem. I had to have some surgery done so that so it was possible for me to father children. But let's go back to that. We were trying to get pregnant, and by the time we got pregnant, my wife was going to be, I'm trying to think, she would have been 33. She was going to give birth just short of her, or just after her 33rd birthday. Well, they demanded that we go in and have an amniocentesis done. Because we got to know, everybody's got to know if that baby is, you have a higher percentage of Down syndrome and other birth defects over the age of 30, over the age of 30, and especially after 32. And my wife and I said, no, thank you very much. A, it's a dangerous procedure for the fetus, the baby. And by the way, don't get suckered by that. It's a fetus, not a baby. No, a fetus means unborn child. We said, no, it's dangerous for the baby. And two, if we find out that the child has a birth defect, we're not going to stop it. It's God's will. Even then, as very young Christians, we were both, it's God's will. If the baby is somehow damaged or not developing properly, that's in God's hands. And I've known people who were like told, you have to abort, you have to abort, you have to abort, you have to abort. This child, we've done the amniocentesis. We know that it's got this or that or another developmental anomaly. You have to abort. And they chose not to abort. And when they didn't abort, guess what? The child's born perfectly normal. Gosh, what could have gone wrong? Lots of things. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't people who want to know to be prepared. And they said, don't you want to be prepared? And I go, we can prepare just as well after the child's born as before. It's not a big deal. Okay. This is one of the things we go back to when Megyn Kelly ran that series of things from The View, from others who were commenting. They were saying horrible things about what J.D. Vance and Donald Trump believe that just simply aren't true. It's, again, we're going back to gaslighting and how we are to judge by a standard. And am I judging by a standard? Of course I'm judging by a standard. Again, let's go back to that. That's the whole reason behind this. We need to be judging by a standard. Alabama Supreme Court came out and judged by a standard. They judged by the standard that life begins at conception. That was the standard they judged by. And even Alabama, we've got to fix this law. They came out and they adjudicated according to the law. And Alabama said, we've got to fix this law. No, you don't. There's nothing wrong with the law. A fertilized egg is a human being. Not fully developed, but fully human. I will continue to ask. And if J.D. Vance or Donald Trump pick this up, which they won't, they are not listening to little radio stations in Rushville, Ohio, or probably to my podcast, which is on, by the way, it's on Apple. It's on. We're available through Apple, the podcast, if you can't pick it up. I always ask the question, how many cells does it take to be considered a fully human? How many cells do you require before you can not kill the baby in an abortion? Now, look, I'm going to be the first to tell you that all this pro-life talk is fine for out of Vance and out of Trump. It's all well and good. But guess what? They took the pro-life plank out of the Republican National Committee platform. And they took the one man, one woman language out of the marriage part of the Republican National Committee platform. They took all that out. Why'd they take it out? To appeal to a broader audience. What broader audience? The people that would be like the people that we've heard on this recording talking about the horrors of what J.D. Vance and Donald Trump are going to do, when in fact they are not going to do any of that. So what standard should we be using? I keep talking about a standard, but I don't say what the standard is. Okay. The standard is God's law. I'm going to go through a list of 10 proposals or 10 rules, if you will, from a book called By This Standard by Greg L. Bonson, Dr. Greg Bonson. He was a brilliant writer, theologian, philosopher. If you ever get a chance to read any of his books, I would do so. I'm reading from By This Standard. Here, rule one, since the fall, it has always been unlawful to use the law of God in hopes of establishing one's own personal merit and justification. In contrast or complement to salvation by way of promise and faith, commitment to obedience is but the lifestyle of faith, a token of gratitude for God's redeeming grace. In other words, we obey the law out of gratitude to as well we can, out of gratitude to God for his redeeming grace. And when we stumble, Christ is there. That is grace. All right, number two, the word of the Lord is the sole, supreme, and unchallengeable standard for the actions and attitudes of all men in all areas of life. This word naturally includes God's moral directives. It's not the whole thing, but it's the linchpin. Okay. Our obligation to keep the law of God cannot be judged by any extra scriptural standard, such as whether its specific requirements, when properly interpreted, are congenial to past traditions or modern feelings and practices. So the law is absolute. It's not dependent upon the era or whether we're in the past or in the future. It is an unchanging standard. Four, we should presume that Old Testament standing laws continue to be morally binding in the New Testament unless they are rescinded or modified by further revelation. And there are a lot of them that have been modified. What does this mean? Oh, you think that you should not eat shellfish and that you not wear mixed fibers in your clothes. No, those things were not and were never actually anything but an attempt to separate the Jews from everybody else around them, their cousins, in fact, around them. Things like the dietary laws are passed away. Why? We see that in Acts chapter 10. They don't count anymore. A lot of those laws have been put away. Five, in regard to the Old Testament law, the New Covenant surpasses the Old Covenant in glory, power, and finality, thus reinforcing former duties. The New Covenant also supersedes the Old Covenant shadows, thereby changing the application of sacrificial purity and separation principles, redefining the people of God and altering the significance of the promised land. That's exactly what I just said, except in a little more descriptive language. Okay. Number six, God's revealed standing laws are a reflection of his immutable moral character and as such are absolute in the sense of being non-arbitrary. God is not arbitrary. Objective, universal, and established in advance of particular circumstances, thus applicable to general types of moral situations. Seven, Christian involvement in politics calls for recognition of God's transcendent, absolute, revealed law as a standard by which to judge all social codes. And there's a kind of a bottom line there, folks. God's law is the standard by which we judge political activity. 8. Civil magistrates in all ages and places are obligated to conduct their offices as ministers of God, avenging divine wrath against criminals and giving an account on the final day of their service before the King of Kings, their Creator and Judge. And I realize I'm upsetting the apple cart here for a number of people who really believe that Christians should have nothing to do with politics. And the fact is that Jesus Christ is the King of everything, including politics, not exclusive of politics. Christ is King and Lord of all, everything, all, and his law applies. 9. The general continuity which we presume with respect to the moral standards of the Old Testament applies just as legitimately to matters of socio-political ethics as it does personal, family, or ecclesiastical ethics. One of the problems we have in our country, especially in our churches right now, is that we really ignore God's law in making judgments. That's why churches that do church discipline, and my church does do church discipline. We've had to do it very rarely because our people are deeply committed to God and to his obedience to him. But nonetheless, people slip. I've sat in on at least one trial, and it was highly unpleasant, very unpleasant. And we had two trials that I can think of, and again, both unpleasant. And one of them so far has had a very, very, as an outcome that's about as good as we could have expected. The person is still in church. The person is reconciled to God and reconciled to the congregation, and is a productive member of the congregation. Other consequences have come out of their action, but that was to be expected. We fully expected there to be further consequences from a spiritual mistake. Okay, number 10. The civil precepts of the Old Testament, the standing judicial laws, are a model of perfect social justice for all cultures, even in the punishment of criminals. Those are presuppositional. And those are the things that I personally use to apply judgment. I don't judge in such a way as to, I have found the adherence to these laws to actually have tempered my judgment with mercy, because I am aware that I'm a miserable sinner. And unfortunately, people say things that get used against them, and people judge by unrighteous judgments. And what can you do about it? You can't. You have to apply these standards to yourself. It's not your job to apply these standards to someone else unless you're in a position to do so. Now, did I say don't judge? No, don't judge unrighteously. Well, folks, is it weird to believe in God, family, country, defending the borders, controlled immigration, in marriage, in not having children out of wedlock, not having all kinds of oddities, transgenders, people who mock women by feeding babies with false breasts, people who mock God in any way. Is that weird, or is it more weird to be obedient to God and to his law? I ask you these questions. Well, you know what I think. I want to know what you think. First of all, my email address is chairman@principledpolicy.com. That's chairman@principledpolicy.com. And you can look up the archives. I'm trying to fix it. I've mentioned that before. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.